What an honor for us this week to be able to spend some time talking with Kyle Carpenter. He is a Medal of Honor recipient. A Medal of Honor recipient talking with us, and it was just really cool. So what we decided to do is so many people have asked us to replay that interview, so we're going to go ahead and attach that to the end of this week's podcast. He is a hero. He is a Marine. He is a guy who has earned the right to be heard. So please stick around for the last 10 minutes of this podcast to hear from Kyle Carpenter. Believe me, the book is amazing that he's going to tell you about. It's good. So ready? With that knowledge, now we shall start this week's podcast.
And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show five days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yay!
You know what that was?
Yeah, some people taking pictures, selfies.
Yay!
It's the best, man. And the reason I picked that gold to start this week's show off, last week we were at the beach hanging out with friends, and I can't tell you how many times, all the girls. We would take so many selfies, and you know, it's all the sunset selfies, the sunrise selfies. Look, there's a seagull selfie.
Oh my gosh.
Yay!
And after every photo, we're having dinner.
Yay!
And oh, look at this, is us standing outside the restaurant.
Yay!
And we're going to get donuts in the morning. You get the idea. After every selfie, they always did the yay. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
You know, I didn't notice it until Bubba said something about it one time. Like, because we were taking selfies with somebody and they went, yay. And then he said it. Well, it's a joke because it annoyed him.
Well, I noticed it because when we take selfies with listeners or people like at game nights or whatever it may be, for some reason, I noticed that ladies in general, usually you hear the snap of the camera on the phone.
Yay!
It's almost every single time.
And so now I noticed it. So thank you. Thank you for that.
As you are a listener of the podcast, you're now going to have this curse as well. The knowledge of the yay. It's pretty great, man.
You know what's weird is it seems like we aren't. I remember, 4 years ago, three years ago, whatever, when it was the election, you had Hillary and Trump and all the people. Didn't it seem like they started it like way earlier than now? Is that. Like, shouldn't we be, like, having debates? Or I guess they are having debates.
They are having debates. The difference is this last election, you had double the debates because you had the Republicans and the Democrats. Yeah. The Republicans basically have their candidate. It's very rare that a sitting president is not the candidate for the next election because you're
incumbent.
Has that
ever happened?
Yeah, every so often it does. But I think it's happened a few times. But usually you lose that election. So you try to keep that incumbent president there because there's a lot of people who say, well, they're already the president. They know the job. The last 4 years wasn't that bad. I'm good. Keep them. And so that's what you get. Whether it's Republican or Democrat, the incumbent usually wins the election unless they did a really bad job.
Pat, what's y'all's favorite?
Or some kind of scandal.
By the way, I think you're saying a president in his first term not running for re-election.
Right.
A president who's still eligible. Probably Lyndon Johnson.
Is that the only one?
Yeah, he was eligible to run again in 68 and announced that he wasn't going to, which left the Democratic Party up to grab a new candidate.
Now, on that in that case, didn't he serve already like half of Kennedy?
According to the 25th Amendment, if it's more than half. So, see, Kennedy was there for 2.5 years, basically, 2 years and 10 months, and then Johnson took over. So he only served less than half of Kennedy's term.
So he would have basically been
eligible
able to serve.
To serve another term.
So he would have been able to be president if he had chose to for probably like close to 10 years.
Nine and a half years, yeah.
Wow.
How many amendments are there?
27.
And it's hard to do an amendment, right?
Yes, very hard.
Like, there's some people wanting to know, how hard is it to take away the Second Amendment?
Extremely hard. But 3/4 of state legislatures
have to approve it after Congress approves it, which would be impossible. Three-fourths of state legislatures in the United States is...
Well, you say that, but the way that 38? People are being brainwashed now, especially towards guns, I mean, it's...
38 states voting against it. 38 states.
I'm just saying there is the possibility that...
The problem is 38 states, you could have 60% of the population if you get the 12 biggest states. You pick the 12 biggest states, you're probably at like 70% of the U.S. population. But those 38 states, the smaller ones, still vote against something like that.
So I just looked it up. The last, do you know what year the last amendment was added?
It's in the 70s.
No.
When?
The 27th was added in 1992.
92 was, which one was that?
Congressional compensation.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking of the voting age. Yeah, that they can't vote themselves a pay raise. They can only vote pay raises for the future.
And then right to vote at the age of 18 was the 26th.
That was, when was that? That was in the 70s.
71.
I'm ready for the 28th, you know, the one about term limits.
Well.
That'll never happen. You think they're going to vote themselves out of jobs?
Congress is going to vote themselves term limits, but that one could get passed by the states. The other thing that you hear a lot is abolishing the Electoral College. I promise you, in our lifetime, that will never happen. Because, again, 38 states would have to approve it, and those small states will never agree.
I was going
to
say,
give up the Electoral College.
You know, it's so funny because when I was first getting into the whole, golly, this turned directly into the politics thing, but it's really not politics.
It's civics.
Yeah, civics. Thank you. When I first started getting, I'm like, the Electoral College is dumb. Let the people speak. And then I started to realize,
realize the people ain't so good.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny because that's how we end up with President Camacho.
Yeah.
How does that work? The college.
Okay, so basically, the Electoral College protects the smaller states from the bigger states. That's what it's all about. That's
gives them
the entire,
equal voice.
Not equal, but it's
better
weighted.
Representation.
It's weighted. It's the same reason you have two senators. That's another thing you hear people in big cities push against is we need to change the Senate so that it's proportional. No, the Senate was
well. That's
never
the way the House is. The House is its way to be that way,
absolutely.
And that's why you have the differences between the House and the Senate.
Is it fair that California has the same number of senators as Idaho?
Yeah,
because
the House is weighted.
I think
weighted.
So, but if you live in California, you don't think so. So,
Here's the thing, man. We're equal states. We all have – I totally believe in that. I told you. I started watching John Adams again, the HBO thing from several years ago. And you start watching it and you realize we are so far off. We are so perverse when it comes to our interpretation of the Constitution and the way they really meant it.
And I
noticed that when I went to James Madison's house a couple of years ago. We went and toured his place. And sitting there, you know, where he walked and paced the halls trying to decide which word to use, you know, so that these documents wouldn't be twisted in the future.
But there was so much that they couldn't foresee. They didn't.
Well, that's why you have the amendments.
Even telecommunication and things like that. Even cars and interstate commerce. I mean, they gave interstate commerce to the House of Representatives. They didn't know what that meant. Back then, interstate commerce was what I could load on my horse and take to the next state, you know, on a wagon. There were no trains. There were no cars. There was no airplanes for sure. So, I mean, yeah, when the states were really separated, because to get from Georgia to New York took 3 days.
Days, no months. I was watching Outlander. I'm telling you, they were in North Carolina going to New York State.
And get from Georgia to New York in 2 days.
In Outlander, where's Carson? I need some backup in here. It took them 3 months to get to the tribe and try to get Homeboy back. That's all I'm saying.
I'm talking Pony Express, man. Let's do it.
What's y'all's favorite history little nugget, like something you're like, wow, did you guys know blank?
Oh, wow.
I mean, all of my stories like that are about country music.
You don't have any history.
I don't know of any history ones, no.
I'll tell you one that, excuse me, I had to burp off mic. I'll tell you one that always blows me away is whenever I was in school and, you know, you learn your American history in elementary school. So they give you the elementary school version of it. Like, I didn't realize that tar and feather was torture. They sold it to us as you get tarred and feathered. They roll you in tar, and then they put you in the chicken feathers. Ha ha! And it's just embarrassing. And people go, "Ooh, you got tarred and feathered." That's not true. It is torture. They pour hot oil on you.
Of course it is.
And it burns
only
you.
Bubba,
and then
was
they
Bubba
throw,
the only one who thought that didn't sound
my
like torture?
School, my school, they were like, oh, yeah, they're going to just put some oil on you, and you roll in the chicken feathers, quack, 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 you know, and I did duck noises. And then they're like, yeah, it's great, and they parade you through town, and I didn't realize it was torture.
Yeah.
That's a little crazy history nugget. Another one is, let's see, what's another great one?
I think Taft was the first president to get stuck in the bathtub.
Yeah, that's a story.
Well, their bathtubs were all messed up back then, though.
They were small. They weren't that big.
They were tiny. They had tall sides. So you had to get in there all weird. Like, you couldn't just squat down in it. I mean, you could, I guess, but...
Yeah, I know what you mean. The sides were... They're not like they are today.
Right.
Yeah.
And they didn't have safety handles, you know, in the bathrooms. Like, you can get, like, when you go to a hotel... And they have those little safety handles. You're like, ooh, I like this. You've never stayed like in the handicap room and they got the safety handles everywhere?
I've never stayed in a room where I had a handle.
Oh, yeah. I have. It's cool. It's great. I'm like, man, great. I need this at my house.
That's I usually take that. I get a discount, too. I'm joking. It's a joke. I don't do that.
Andrew Jackson fought in the American Revolution, sort of, as like a teenager. It was the last real... revolutionary president, because if you think about it, this is crazy, because we think of all the founding fathers as old men and they all hung out together, but think about the amount of time between Washington and Monroe. It was Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and Monroe was the fifth president. Well, that was 30 years later, maybe.
Yeah.
So,
well, they were younger. That's another thing, too, is they weren't all old men like the way they depict it in the thing. They wore those goofy powdered wigs. So it made them look like they were all gray-haired old men. And, you know, most of them were not. They were, you know, in their 20s. A lot of the signers of the Declaration.
So Monroe was president from 1817 to 1825. When he was president in 1825, the Union had been going for 36 years as – under the Constitution. Washington became president in 1889. So 36 years later, we're still using the original dudes. That's a long time.
Yeah.
So, and really, if you think about it from the Declaration of Independence, it's almost 50 years. So 1776, we, you know, tell England we're done, we're going to fight the war, and we're going to be our own country. 50 years later, 49 years later, one of those dudes is still president 50 years later.
Well, do you know why? Because he was 18 years old when the Declaration of Independence came. That's what I'm saying.
And he didn't sign the Declaration of Independence.
But I'm saying
he did write the Constitution.
But I'm saying he's one of those crew that, you know, those guys were,
right.
A lot of them were young.
Jefferson was young. Jefferson was like 30 when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, or 30-something. So, but it's still crazy to think that no new people came in that long. Can you imagine us voting for president today and electing someone who was still involved in 1969, or someone who was involved even in the early 70s? We think of these guys who got elected in the early 90s as being super old. I can tell I've bored D because he's just randomly calling people.
You're the one who asked the question.
I know.
No, I'm not bored at all. I want to bring an expert on to talk about this.
Oh, okay.
No, you got to try that over.
Oh, sorry about that.
We need a phone dialing expert, somebody who can do your job for you.
Yes. Oh, well, it's me.
It is you. All right, so while Big D tries to dial, again, we do want to mention something because we've had issues with it lately. We used to do the live stream on Facebook until a couple weeks ago, and iOS, Apple redid their updates,
Hello.
And it broke it. Hold on 1 second. They broke it. So that's why we haven't been able to do both the audio and the video version of it.
Okay, so Kathy's been – this is my wife, Kathy. So she's been working on this presidential book for this company. They're basically like flashcards. So she's been doing all this research on presidents to find interesting tidbits about them and what and whatnot. So she's – how long did you spend on this? A week or so, too?
Well, it was a good week.
And
it was a pretty full week.
So I would walk in the house and I would go, okay. She would go, hey, how are you? I'm good. Taft, go. And she would give me something about Taft. So we're talking about history and presidents. Give us, can you give us some interesting tidbits about some of the presidents?
Yeah. Let's see.
Are you going to the book? Are you going to the flashcards?
Yeah, I'm going to the Well, the kind of the data that I collected. Because for the flashcard, it was just it wasn't really as much about their life as about what they did in office. But some of them were like really interesting. Period. Like who do you think was the first president to actually be born in a hospital?
Oh, I know this. It's Carter.
Yep.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
So it took until the 1970s for us to get a president that was born in a hospital?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
And really, Carter is 97, so he was born in the 20s. So even up to the 20s, it was extremely uncommon for people to not be born at home.
That's crazy. By the way, George Washington was 44 years old when they signed the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, he was just a general.
And they always show him as being this old man. It's weird.
You nailed it earlier. One, it's because of our perception of these people as being old because they were dead before we were born. But two, it's those wigs, man. The wigs are really trippy.
Yeah. What you got for us, Kath?
Let's see. Where did Abe Lincoln keep some of his most important documents and photos?
In his underwear.
In a safe in the barn.
She said close on underwear.
In his boot.
Think about it. Think about the pictures of him.
Oh, in his
top hat.
Top hat.
He had a big old hat full of documents.
That hat was his safe. He walked around with his briefcase on his head.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to wear a hat that big, you might as well keep your wallet, your keys.
That's pretty great.
You know, your cell phone. As a matter of fact, if you think about it, with today, with all the stuff we carry around, top hats.
Yeah, they should come back.
And they should be strong enough where we can sit on them.
Yes.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Give us another little great factoid.
How did the Democrats get the donkey as their mascot?
That was actually from whoever the other party was. They were calling them jackasses, if I'm not mistaken. And
yeah, it was, yep.
Like the Whigs or somebody like that?
Yeah. It's when the I think it's what we would know as the Republican Party. It was called Democratic Republican Party, and then Andrew Jackson got into there was a big fight. Believe it or not, presidents fought back then, too, and it kind of split the party, and the opponents of Jackson called him they called him a jackass, and he thought that was so funny that he kind of made that his own little personal symbol.
So he owned it.
And then, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then later, kind of what came from him was a Democratic Party, and they decided to adopt it from there.
All right. Well, that's pretty
great. Isn't that great?
Cool.
Yeah. Now they just like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, that's it. That's us.
Yeah, we're the jackasses.
I also want to say, because I was going to say this before we even called Kathy, that what I love about Andrew Jackson is the first five presidents were all founding fathers. And then John Quincy Adams, and there's the heavy association. He was around. His dad was
a founding son.
Yeah, you know. But after that, it's, oh, gosh.
Now what?
Who are we going to get? You know, we've run out of people.
Well, he was a war hero from the War of 1812.
Yeah, so they went with a war hero, and this guy who was a kid during the Revolution but was still involved. And he was the first president who was not involved, not connected to the actual founding of the country.
Yay!
Okay.
He's the first one who took a selfie.
Yes, he is.
Sure was.
He did.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kathy, one more. Give us one more.
I'm trying to find it. Who is the only president to never be truly elected in? I've got to find it here.
Truman.
The only president.
There's one guy who became president, and he was not an elected official.
Not an elected official.
It wasn't Truman?
No, it's Trump.
No, she's saying that it was someone who was not elected.
No, he became president, but he was not elected.
Oh, he was not ever elected president? Gerald Ford.
He was not elected president, and he was not elected
vice president. Gerald Ford.
He became president.
How did he become president?
Gerald Ford was appointed vice president, and then he became president.
How do you get appointed vice president?
Well, the vice president resigns, Spiro Agnew, and they appoint a new vice president, and then the House and the Senate both have to confirm him.
Yay!
Thank you.
That's insane that you know that, man.
I knew
man.
That right away.
By the way, those flashcards will be for sale at Target. But, Patrick, you don't need one.
You can always just call me, and I'll tell you the stuff. Wow. Come on, Kathy, throw another one out.
Yeah, just one more. I know Big D said one more a minute ago. One more parting shot.
Give one that you can stump Patrick. Stump Patrick.
Oh, gosh. Give me a couple minutes. There's so much information here.
While you're looking for that, I will say this. She said that it was easy to find information on presidents. It was hard to find something that wasn't absolutely just negative on Trump. She said there's so much.
Oh by Googling. And
just the people who do the sites.
You couldn't get facts. You know, I'm just in for the facts, and you couldn't get facts.
It was all
well, here's one for you. Trump has never held public office. I think he's the only president to never hold elected office before becoming president of the United States, except
Abraham Lincoln.
No, George Washington.
George Washington.
Oh, never held any public office.
Abe Lincoln was a senator, right?
But also, yes. But if you say who never held elected office, or I think Grant maybe also never held elected office, or served in the military. So that's then very unique.
Yeah.
Trump is also the oldest.
The oldest president. That's correct.
Really?
Well, the oldest elected first term.
Yeah, and he's
so he was,
and
older,
he'll be older.
Wait, he was older than Reagan going in.
He was older than Reagan at the
going
beginning.
Going in,
of,
yes.
At the beginning of Reagan's second term.
Oh wow!
Trump at the beginning of his first term was older than Reagan at the beginning
very,
of his
he
second term.
He does carry himself very young. Like whether you love him or hate him or whatever, the guy doesn't look his age. He doesn't.
Okay, one more to stump Patrick.
Okay. All right, this is going to be a sports question. Who started the tradition of throwing out the first ball of the MLB
Taft.
Season?
Woo! Oh, you
wow,
already.
Dang it.
Yes.
Dang. How
you know
the
what?
World?
You know, not only that, he started another great tradition. Do you know what it was? Taft went to throw out the first ball, and then he's sitting there. And back then, still today, if the president's in a room and the president stands up, what does everyone else do?
You have to
they
stand.
Have to stand. Okay. So Taft is sitting there, and he's sitting there, and he's getting and
at
the
baseball
bench
game
is really bothering his back, and he's just really kind of getting cranky and irritated by it. So he, you know, the inning ended, the top of the seventh. And Taft stood up to stretch his back. Well, everyone thought that he was leaving, so the entire place stood up. And the president just kind of goes, oh, you know, and he does a little stretch to show everyone that he was just stretching and waves to the crowd and sits back down. And they all sit back down. And that's the seventh inning stretch. That's we still do that.
Shut up.
How about that?
Shut
Kathy, why is it not on your flashcards?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
I've heard that story.
Man,
maybe,
I got to go back and redo them all now. Yeah.
That story may be apocryphal, but I want that to be true, so I stand by
good
it.
Good word, man.
Man.
Did you know that we have a $500 bill?
We have an actual $500 bill.
And a $1,000 bill and a $10,000 bill.
We have a $500 bill? Who's on the $500 bill? Is it a president?
It's McKinley. Isn't
it?
Is it McKinley?
Yes.
Yeah,
Patrick. What
how do you know all this?
Because he doesn't play sports.
Yay!
Yeah, there all you right, go. That's why.
All right, thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
That was fascinating. All right, bye bye. And you got to let us know when the little book comes out because that's like fascinating stuff.
Just following up, $500 bills do not circulate. Neither do $1,000 bills.
Why don't they circulate?
Because they.
They have poor circulation. God bless
They're still legal tender, but they don't print new ones, and you know nobody uses them. Are you laughing at his dad joke?
No, it's not a dad.
It's not a dad joke. It's a pun, totally different.
You laughing at his stupid pun?
Yes, stupid puns are fine. I don't mind if you call it a stupid pun. Don't call it a dad joke, because you know what? That is degrading, and it's really, really hurtful to the joke.
But most dad jokes are puns,
right? Which is punny.
See, that's a dad joke.
No, it's a pun.
That was a dad. Anyway.
Tis a pun.
All right, so we're about to play the interview that I think everyone needs to hear. This guy is unbelievable, and there are so many that are like him. It's just, I wish we could honor all of them.
I don't know how. I mean, first of all, he's incredibly humble. And, you know, when you get him on the phone, you're expecting, you know, it's a guy who was a recipient of the Medal of Honor. You expect him to be like, dun, 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 G.I. Joe. But he's so soft-spoken and humble. And I can't imagine living with the weight of having that medal around your neck. I mean, I know it's the most incredible honor. It's the highest honor in the military. It's pinned on you. It's put around your neck by a president. That's how important it is.
Obama did his, right?
Most Medal of Honor recipients are posthumous. Most of them are after they're dead because you did something so incredibly crazy stupid to save someone's life or to help the mission or the battle or whatever it is that it costs you your life. Somehow he survived what he went through. We'll tell you all that whenever we get the interview going, but to know that the weight, like we've talked about, you know, kind of off the air, I mean, hundreds of guys do things that are Medal of Honor worthy. And, you know, so often you hear these Medal of Honor recipients say, you know, why me? It's almost a curse because you have to live with this medal around your neck forever. Everything you do for the rest of your life, you are a Medal of Honor recipient, and you're supposed to be held at such a high standard. And I couldn't imagine the weight of that medal. And I'm not talking the physical medal. I'm talking about.
Yeah, we know what you mean.
Yeah,
Let's just get into it.
I'm just saying, the guy blew me away because he's so exactly what you want that medal to be hanging around that person's neck. He is the guy you say, I want him to represent America in the best of the best.
It's a great interview. You're going to hear it right now. Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's podcast.
This was the podcast, but now it's...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I set you up.
I'm sorry.
Yay! This was the podcast, but now it's over.
That's okay,
because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.
Yay!
It's a true honor to have Kyle Carpenter on. He's the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient. He joins us on the phone. He's got a new book out. It's called You Are Worth It, and he joins us now. Hey, Kyle, how are you, man?
Hey, good morning. I'm living the dream. How are y'all?
Pretty good. Man, we're good. We are good. So for those who don't know your story, get us caught up.
I think the most obvious, I was injured by a hand grenade in November 21st of 2010.
Now, wait, you guys, I think we need to really explain. It wasn't just you were injured by a hand grenade. You purposely moved towards the grenade when it was thrown into your position with you and another guy as you were pulling security, correct?
That is correct. Myself and a fellow Marine, an incredible Marine and best friend, we were on top of a roof. And we were in our world known as what's called a post position, but it's essentially a lookout position. And everything that I'm about to tell you is based off of an extensive two-year investigation, 254-page investigation done by the Marine Corps and Department of Defense. But the enemy, like every single day in Afghanistan for the 4 months that we had been there up until this point, initiated a daylight attack. Three grenades were thrown before the fourth one that was thrown, which landed in very close proximity to us. And based off of the eyewitness accounts and the post-blast analysis that was done to my gear and the hole in the roof, which you can still see from Google Earth, yes, I covered the hand grenade that was thrown at us. And I don't remember anything from the entire day. I don't remember the moments leading up to it or thinking about it. All I remember is physically how my body felt after the grenade detonated. I was extremely confused, and I felt like I got hit really hard in the face, and I struggled to put the disoriented pieces together. And I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm pretty sure I was in Afghanistan. I think I was on a roof, but what could have injured me that bad on a roof? Maybe I got off and went on a foot patrol, stepped on an IED, and that's just the last thing I can remember. Those thoughts were interrupted by the sensation of what I thought was warm water being poured over me. And that kind of last piece of the puzzle allowed the other pieces to fall in place. And I realized that what I was feeling was not warm water. It was blood, and I was profusely bleeding out. And with the way I felt physically, the casualties I had seen up until that point on deployment and our medical training, I knew that, unfortunately and inevitably, my time was limited. So I thought about my family, how devastated my mom was going to be that I did not survive to make it home. I said a quick prayer for forgiveness and anything I had done wrong in my life, and a tiredness that is impossible to recount or convey started to consume every fiber of my being, and I faded from the world in consciousness on that hot, dusty rooftop in Afghanistan, and I woke up roughly 5 weeks later, and as I slowly opened the only eye I had left, my first sight in my new life, you could say, with five Christmas stockings that my mom had hung on my hospital room wall, decorating my room for the holidays, while snow was building outside on my window pane. Following that, that was really the beginning of my journey. And when I woke up, that started my three-year recovery at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center.
As of today, how many surgeries have you had?
Well, me and Mom tried to keep count, but we lost count. But I would say around 40.
Wow.
So you lost your eye, most of your teeth, your jaw, your arm were shattered. Then at what point did you find out that you were being presented the Medal of Honor?
Not until beginning of 2014, when I, at this point, was already into my sophomore year at the University of South Carolina. So early in the year, I had left class. I went and took a call from President Obama. I went back to class, and a few months later, in June of 2014, I received the medal.
Wow. That's so crazy. You're the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, and you've written a book. It's called You Are Worth It. The book, what is the message of the book, essentially?
So it's important for people to know that the reason I am just writing this book now is going through the years as I thought about potentially writing a book, not necessarily discouraged, but I was never motivated enough to start it because I didn't know how I was going to write it. All I knew was that I didn't want to write a book that only service members or veterans or someone that had been to combat could understand. I wanted to write something that transcended all boundaries and that anyone and everyone, no matter where you're from or your walk of life, could pick up and not only understand, but take lessons from. And so as I went through the years of speaking engagements and events and meet and greets, I kind of had a light bulb moment when I realized that everyone that was coming up to me was, you know, they would say, well, I was never in the military, but, and then proceed to tell me their own version of struggle. So I realized, you know, of course, I can write about struggle because, you know, physically, mentally, or emotionally, everyone struggled. And struggle is the common thread throughout every single person on this earth. So, yes, there's a couple of chapters about, to give context about Afghanistan and the grenade and the attack, but the vast majority of it is from the blast on. And I wrote it to help people, but to show people that, you know, the smallest of steps eventually completes the grandest of journeys. And I wrote from the message of perspective that many times I only found and I only learned and experienced because I was forced to search for that faint and glimmering hope and those silver linings through those long, dark, and painful nights in the hospital. But I, you know, it's okay if, you know, you don't know what lays ahead. It's okay if you don't even know what tomorrow holds. But when you have healed and when it's the right time, you have to realize that we really only have two options: to take that small step forward or stay exactly where we are. And thankfully, early on, I chose to start taking those baby steps. And now I'm so thankful that I can tell people that, you know, you truly can come back better and stronger. You might be physically, mentally, or emotionally different, and that is absolutely okay. But you can truly come back better and stronger than whatever knocked you down in life.
It's a great message, man. We are so proud of you, of what you have done, and the message that you're taking from what happened and helping others. It's just another selflessness of you and your personality, man. The book is called You Are Worth It by Kyle Carpenter. You Are Worth It. You can check him out on his Instagram, which is the best Instagram page ever made. It's Chicks Dig Scars on Instagram, and that's Chick with a K, C-H-I-K. Chicks Dig Scars on Instagram, and it's also his Twitter account as well. Kyle, thank you for your service. Thank you for the book, and we wish you all the best, my friend.
Hey, thank you. You're worth it, and I appreciate you taking the time to help me spread the good word and try to help people.